This week, we're all about that red, no blue. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 77. The kids call it the process. Today is November 7th, 2014. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
This is Rob.
A week ago was Halloween, and 3 days ago was Election Day. I'm not sure which day is more make-believe. And let's not forget the day when we all reaffirm our willingness to do any senseless thing the government tells us to by adjusting our clocks back and forth for no apparent reason. Do you want to know why we still observe daylight savings time?
Habit. Inertia.
Okay, I'll tell you.
All right.
It is simply an exercise in conditioning to get us all used to mindlessly following orders. My kids asked me the other night why I was changing their clocks, so I had to tell them. There's no reason for it. It's completely pointless. But we all do it because the government tells us to. So I was asked earlier this week why I don't vote, and I gave my standard answer. And then I was challenged on it, and it forced me to think more deeply about my objections to voting, so I'll delve into that just a little bit. We also want to remember that...
I would like a three-headed monster, please.
You
got to
turn the big one?
No.
No?
Yeah. Got to pause for drinks.
I'll have another one.
I'm good for right now.
Also
thank
like
you.
The Asian glazed shrimp, please.
And the Asian shrimp? Okay.
It's the classic.
I didn't get to eat. I'm extra angry right now.
You're not yourself when you're angry.
I could eat, so hungry. I can take my
right.
back pill.
Just start at the second stanza.
So you
here.
Got a thing for Asians? Is that it?
Only if they're shrimp.
Nice.
All right, hit the second stanza.
So, right. So we also want to remember that no matter how effed up our country is, our lives would be a lot worse without our veterans who have sacrificed so the rest of us could sit around and bitch. So we want to say thank you to all who have served and who are currently serving. Happy Veterans Day next week.
I have a comment. You just reminded me of a
okay.
thing I want to talk about.
And to finish up here, our break music is provided once again by the Polish ambassador.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
He is awesome.
Or they're awesome. I'm not sure if it's
just a guy. He wears like a yellow jumpsuit and he's Polish and then he creates incredible jams.
He's awesome. No question. So let's talk about voting.
Let's.
So, Rob, did you vote this week?
I did vote, but only by extreme pressure from my wife.
Really? You were going to blow it off?
I was going to blow it off.
She wanted you to vote a certain way, and you did it in spite of your own opinion.
Did you two cancel each other out?
I was like, you go, I'll just vote against you. No. We were in the district for Proposition S, which was going to increase funding. It was a bond issue for the Parkway School District, which ended up passing. My wife felt pretty strongly about it. I'm like, I tend to vote for school things. I don't know. I'm a little bit of a sucker. That is dumb. But I think
just gonna waste.
I think
it.
like by default, I tend to vote for school things. Anyway, so that was the local issue on there. I gotta say, I was woefully underinformed about pretty much every other candidate on the, and I did willingly skip all of the boxes about the judges.
Yeah.
But I threw some Democrat votes in there just to keep one with my peeps.
On the few occasions that I have voted, all I do with the judges is I just vote out the incumbent.
Yeah, I've done that too, just to mix it up.
Yeah.
Should judge be retained? No. Should
no,
judge
right.
be retained? No.
No.
I do that all.
You know what struck me on the St. Louis County ballot was how many state reps, how many were running unopposed.
Yeah.
I mean, there had to be two dozen.
Really?
across the state that were running unopposed. And I'm thinking, okay, so maybe they're in districts that are fairly homogeneous, and you know, there's absolutely no chance of the opposing party winning. That kind of makes sense, but at the same time, to me, it reflects the fact that we don't have the level of engagement that's necessary to really make the system worthwhile.
And I think to go along with that, I don't know if you guys followed it, but it was kind of fascinating that Bob McCullough, the...
Well, that's what I was just getting ready to
say. So the prosecutor, was he the county prosecutor in charge of the case? Right, for the county.
Running unopposed.
Kind of coming under fire, right? Was unopposed on the ballot, and like people were fired up and started writing in candidates. Mm-hmm. And even with the write-ins tallied in, it was like 6% of the vote, and like the other 93% just, and it shows
an opportunity though that okay, you want to organize something,
right?
Get a name out there,
right? That would have been easy.
It would have.
You want to complain, and you would think, especially since he's been at the center of the Ferguson controversy, you would think he would have been a natural target for everybody that's protesting and using the Ferguson, hashtag Ferguson.
And this came up in one of the roundtable discussions. As this is all hearsay, that's told by my wife, so be careful here. but it was Claire McCaskill and Tef Poe, the rapper up in Ferguson, and
tight.
They're tight. So they were follow
her part of his
on Twitter at Tef Poe, TEFPOE. And so and they were discussing the issue, and Tef, I suppose we call him, was
TP.
TP,
Mr. Poe.
You know, was basically claiming that him and his community and his kind of side of the protesters feel so disenfranchised from the voting system and democracy that it's just not worth even voting. And Claire McCaskill, the Democrat, one of Jeremy's biggest friends, said, kind of challenged him on it and said, that's not true. If you organized enough people in your community, in Ferguson or in the county or whatever, and you wanted to go, vote for whatever the representative is, they're going to get in,
I don't understand the disenfranchised thing.
Right.
I do not understand that at all. My vote is no more meaningful than anybody else.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to have somebody on the show who feels disenfranchised so they can explain.
Exactly.
That.
Well, maybe we do.
Right. And it might not be a good bad idea.
Because, I understand the sentiment, but I don't necessarily understand the particulars of, what has forced them into that.
Right.
Like, why do you feel disenfranchised? What is the series of events that brought you there?
If the answer is, well, this candidate doesn't represent my views, well, that's the same thing that I feel.
Yeah.
But I'm picking... I kind of like this one more than this one.
And this maybe goes... Oh, this is completely off the topic, as I tend to be. But there's a real parallel between, and I may have mentioned this before, between communities and groups of people that are severely oppressed and the conspiracy theories that arise from them. And so, for example, like a good thing is, the Palestine, against Israel. Like not only is it Israel, but it's like a grand global conspiracy to, make the water stink or whatever it is. It's always something that's always put against them.
Right.
And this is the same sort of concept here where I think the feeling is that no matter who they put up, the powers that be are going to squash them. If they got 90% of the vote, they're going to count all the votes wrong and they're going to get squashed. And my funny thing I saw on the good old Twitter machine that goes with this was there was a lot of did you hear a lot of fighter traffic up north recently, maybe at least in the last month? More than usual or no?
Are you talking aircraft?
Aircraft, yeah.
No.
I think I've heard less. I saw some 15s flying yesterday, or not yet, two days ago, which is semi-unusual.
I feel like I've heard more, and sometimes depending on
over the summer,
right
before August.
Are they patrolling Ferguson?
the things that there were people on Twitter who thought it was a show of force against their movement.
Yeah.
To fly these fighter aircraft. I am not kidding. But do you see? Do you see the?
It couldn't possibly have anything to do with the fact that Ferguson is 1,000 yards from the end of Lambert's runways.
Right. And,
yeah, that
which
couldn't
operates
be
as a military base. But do you see? Do you see? Like, I'm trying to become one with this mindset of, you know, it's. I mean, we're talking about why there's not voting engagement and putting representatives up. They think there's you know, military aircraft that are scrambled to ruin the protests
to intimidate them.
Right?
Yeah, they, huh? What do you mean by they?
Because I'm not one with the protesters at this point.
I'm not, and it's interesting because I guess I can't say usually, but my impression is that when you have a conspiracy theory like that, there's at least the conditions that support it. Like, well, yeah, there was increased fighter activity and more flights, but it's not the reason you think. Well, no, it wasn't even increased flights.
We're just manufacturing evidence.
And I think maybe that day I may have heard more, but it all depends on what the traffic pattern is or whatever it is that they're doing, which I have no idea what they're doing. Isn't it a property of oppressed communities, especially you conservatives, because you guys are oppressed.
Yeah.
You know,
we do best.
Right. Invent,
oppress and oppress some more.
Invent maddening conspiracy theories that are meant to pound you down. Like another good example, my old eldest brother who doesn't listen to the podcast. You know, it's like just as much of a tradition in the fall of Jerry talking about daylight savings time. Is every Monday before election talk about voter fraud being perpetrated by Democrats? You know,
right?
And you know, and we're just talking on the, you know, the text messages, like, but all the polls showed, you know, Obama winning by a landslide. Nate Silver nailed it by the electoral vote. Did he just like factor in the fraud, or, you know?
Well, he knew.
Yeah, he knew. He's like, well, it's really even, but the fraud's gonna kick it over. You know.
Right. They sent him a copy of the report.
Yeah.
Right.
So
you know, and to bring it up to this election, you know, it's like I think there is voter fraud. I don't really doubt it, but I don't really think it's a major factor in what's all going on. But it makes you comforted when you feel like you lost. And then when you win, you feel like, ooh, not only did we win, but we beat all the voter fraud. I mean, it's like a very self-comforting kind
right,
of theory.
So I have a question for you.
Oh, boy.
Let's come back. Is it along those lines?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, the voter fraud thing, I have opinions about that. I think maybe it has some influence. And I know what happens. I had a couple of funny instances when I voted. The guy ahead of me, they were trying to get him to initial by his son's name. He's like, no, I'm this guy, not this one. And he was on... It's like he was on the next page. They weren't even on the right page for his name.
Well,
the guy ahead of me in line. And they weren't purposely trying to do it. It was just
goofball stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Lack of attention to detail.
Right.
And it wasn't, I don't even think it was like John Smith Jr. It was,
right,
you know, Rob or Daryl. <Yeah. laughs> That kind of thing. But,
so,
that, like, so the other thing I've seen a lot of recently is the electronic voting machines where they're, hey, it's changing my vote from Republican to Democrat every time. Well, and then they say they've traced a lot of this back to people using the machines incorrectly.
Wow. How do you use it incorrectly?
Well, they're not, you know, you touch it. You don't just use one.
Oh, you so just sort like, of mash it with your big old paw?
Yeah, or they have their palm resting on part of the screen. So... When I always use the electronic voting machines, and the lady who always works the polls, when she goes to start it, you know, they have to put the little cartridge in, and they have to touch the screen. Well, she always uses three of her fingers to touch the screen, and it takes her several times to hit it, and I want to tell her, stop using all of your fingers, just use one.
Right, yeah, the algorithm isn't like, here comes this big input.
Yeah.
It's like...
yeah, that is somewhat counterintuitive. I mean... For a human being to use multiple fingers to point to something.
Yeah. She's like, oh, and then she's hitting it with her longer fingernails. It's like, no,
right.
Use one finger right. And hit it with your skin, please.
Right. Yeah, she's just mashing it like a caveman.
Yeah,
I paw at the go button.
So nice. I kind of laugh at the voter fraud thing, but yeah. It irritates me when I hear politicians say, well, that doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. There are problems, and they need to be addressed, and we need to have elections with some integrity,
yeah.
because we're the first ones to cry foul when Iran elects somebody new, and we say, oh, there was voter
right,
fraud.
Right, right, right. You know,
we have no credibility. That was the point of all that.
Yeah.
Now go on with what you were going to say, Jerry.
You had a question for me.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So there's a story in the reading room. I'll add it to the show notes. And the title is simply Why Vote. This was a story that was in the New York Times, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago. It was prior to Obama's second term. And it was a breakdown of sort of an economist's view of voting. And, you know, an economist is going to look at voting as being completely pointless, right? Because your vote, your individual vote does not count. And there's a cost associated with voting, but no benefit. So to an economist, that's just, you know,
right.
that's a terrible thing for you to, you know, expend the effort, the time and everything to vote and then not get anything out of it, not, you know, and go into it knowing that your vote isn't going to change anything, right? So it's sort of that sort of analysis.
He just said right at the end of that.
Right?
Talking about.
No, it wasn't a bad right. You keep going.
Sorry.
So my question to both of you is, why do you vote?
Because I can. Because I'm an American.
I guess it's not true. That's a little overstated that your vote doesn't change anything. I mean, your vote puts your little grain of sand into the bucket.
What are the odds of your vote swinging any election or any individual contest on the ballot?
This is fascinating.
Your odds are equal to you winning the lottery, buying the winning lottery ticket. They're roughly equal.
People still win the lottery all the time.
No,
they do. You're right.
This is kind of a math question, I think.
Yeah.
Well,
you're asking like. So
let's geek out a little bit on the math.
It's analogous to your weather versus climate question, you know?
Well, okay.
Right.
Jeremy's shaking
his head.
If climate is the sum of all weather, then you can look at any weather event as a contributing factor to the climate. So if it's cold in the winter, it's not global. And that whole thing.
All right. The election is the sum of all votes.
It's the sum of all votes. And so I'm not voting because I think out of a random chance that my vote will be the deciding one. That's the lottery theory. I think I'm putting my little tiny grain of sand in the bucket.
Because you want to be part of that occluded front that just... stalls out over St. Louis.
You're extending the analogy.
And,
that's right. The arch effect stops it. That's extending my analogy a little bit. But you're taking the voting act as if everybody has voted, and then you're the last one in. Mm. And what are the chances that you tip the scales? That's not how I see it. I guess. Yeah. I mean,
in a small scale. That does happen. So why is it no longer valid in a larger scale?
Well, it's simple mathematics. If the three of us vote on what to put on our pizza, you know, one of us our vote carries a lot of weight.
Yes.
We could swing it one way or the other.
Okay.
Rob votes for pepperoni. You vote for sausage. I'm the deciding vote.
Right. So statistically, that's artificially weighting our votes.
Yeah.
And then you get a large enough scale, that's artificially watering down our votes. So there's some sweet spot there that makes your vote, just pristine and worthy and pure.
I would say the sweet spot is three. Any more than
what
three.
What I just said, it's artificially weighting a vote.
But I guess, okay, how about this? See it this way. I disagree with your characterization, but even so, you're saying, so I spent probably an hour and a half because they ran out of paper ballots in the county, and I'm trying to produce some conspiracy theory that was on purpose because I heard other polling places that ran out of paper ballots at like 2 p.m. So it took me like an hour and a half to vote. And did I get the satisfaction?
Sucker.
Did it feel that good to vote? It did not. I got it. In the midterm like this, and Missouri was just crap.
Right.
you know, I think it's different in the presidential election. Or even if Missouri had some pretty awesome propositions, you know, this was like the most stinky election.
Yeah, right. NPR even talked about that this is the first election in Missouri in like 25 years where we weren't electing any senator, no presidential, no governor race, you know, none of that. It was all
Steve Stenger. Oh, get me pumped up.
Hey, they credit Ferguson with influencing that
race.
Yeah.
So how about that?
No.
How about that?
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't even know
what the county executive does.
So for this, I would have been fine with not voting in this particular one.
Come on over. Join us.
Come on over.
Have a chat.
We'll buy you a drink.
We're talking about voting.
It comes with free drinks.
Did you vote this week?
Yes, I did.
You did? Would you mind stepping over there?
Yeah.
Not that I don't want you standing next to me.
Yeah, I want you standing next to me.
But I did a send-in vote.
That's fine.
I'm listed as Jane Doe in the system because I had a victim of stalking, so I'm in Missouri Safe at Home program.
Oh, my gosh.
That's fascinating.
I had
no idea. Come on over.
Well, Jane.
Yes, thank you, Jane, for joining us.
So we'll ask you some questions, and you can just say as many words as you want. It's not a real debate format. You could just.
Do you want to say anything about the program? Because I've never heard of that. I mean,
of what?
The Safe at Home?
Safe at Home program? Safe at Home program is Missouri. It's under Missouri Secretary of State. And what it does is it offers people of victims of domestic violence or victims of stalking. It offers them a security. It's almost like a witness protection program.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like address confidentiality. When you have to, for example, say you buy a new car and you go to register it, instead of just seeing one person to talk to, you got to talk to many, or like you go to the license bureau, there's one person that takes care of your paperwork. And like I was telling you earlier, like I registered Jane Doe under everything.
Is there another organization that has a lady's name attached to it? Because I have heard of the something, the Karen House. Karen
House?
Yes.
I've never heard of that.
I'll have to look that up.
So this is an element of government that seems pretty useful.
That side of it, I think Karen House is a private.
Right, but I just mean in general.
Yes, that part is useful, but now when you get into the state of Missouri's laws when it comes to stalking or violence, they're very weak. Very weak. In order for, if someone's following you and you feel like you're being stalked or pursued, you have to have a restraining order to have anything done about it. You have to have a restraining order. Elsewise, by law, there's really nothing that can happen.
So the cops just ask if you have one. If you don't,
you're pretty much, you can write a report, but it's hard to define what stalking is. That's where the problem lies. Mm-hmm.
And even then, restraining orders are this nebulous thing to me that do nothing but...
And actually, they don't. I had to have 8 violations in my restraining order before this person was put away. And right now, he's facing... And from prison, he violated the restraining order.
What a guy.
Electronic communication or...
Excuse me?
Electronic communication.
Actually, no. It was through good old federal mail system. Yep.
Wow.
He wrote his name on it, wrote my name on it, sent through the mail to the place where I used to work previously that he knew about, and that would be through communication to me, so that'd be a violation.
That's, I just read how the United States Postal Service has a program where they scan mail. It's essentially a surveillance type of thing.
Yeah.
They don't use it for good, of course, like intercepting mail like that. They wouldn't really use it.
What do they use it for?
I didn't quite understand. I read the whole article, and it was just like associating senders and receivers of mail and knowing an address. Anyway, go on.
That's fine.
Yeah, there's a link to it in the show notes.
There's actually something that you guys might find very interesting that I just read about. During Clinton's administration in 1994, he had a 42% approval rate. And, well, at that time, under Clinton's administration, there was about 8-plus Republicans in the House. Well, right now, 2014, 20 years later, we have Obama in the House, a Democrat, and what are we about out right now? We're about at the 8+ on the Republican side. So and ironically, the popularity vote of approval by the people is at 42%, which is exactly what it was in 1994 under Clinton.
How about that? We got history repeating itself here 20 years later.
Yeah, just a nice, something a little ironic. I thought you guys might
I hadn't heard that.
No,
So let me do the anarchist analysis on your situation.
Okay.
Let's.
So if you're not aware, we have a liberal, a conservative, and an anarchist.
I see this. Yeah.
So I'm the anarchist.
All right.
Poor guy.
And so my take on your situation would be everybody has a right to be anonymous, right? So we shouldn't need a special government-run program to put people like yourself, you know, into a special category so that you can remain anonymous. Everybody should have that right, just as a matter of course.
Well, but the government violates that right by wanting to track you all the time.
Absolutely.
But there are many private businesses whose goal is to track their users.
Right.
So it's not a government only thing that wants to violate your privacy. In fact, there's a lot of free market incentive to do just that.
Right, but at least the free market, you have the opportunity to choose not to do business with somebody who won't respect your privacy.
Unless you find out that you did business and then they violated your privacy and you can't
do anything about it.
That, much like the internet. And
so does this extend beyond just like protecting your address and like where you live? And
what the Safe at Home program itself does is it protects it protects my address and the location of where I'm at. There are other programs such as victims' rights programs that if needed I can pursue.
So like you can't use a fake name on your driver's license.
No, my name will still remain as it is, but the address on my driver's license is a P.O. box.
All right. So in some ways, this is similar to police officers are allowed to, like on their home phone, they're able to use a fake name on their home phone, so that when they call other people in other places, their caller ID shows up as, you know, a pseudonym.
And I see exactly where you're going with that. Why doesn't everybody have that protection?
Right.
Yeah. Not just a few selected few, because we all should be protected as a whole in the country, And I understand and I can agree with that point of view, but then you have to think at the same time, since the time that technology took off in the late 80s and 90s, it's like we've almost lost the idea to have protection on our name.
I mean, privacy has taken a huge hit with the, you know, the advance of technology. Certainly the internet has made privacy something you really have to work at now, whereas before it was just a given.
And to speak back with the technology growing, that back Obama's campaign in 2004 was one of the first times that somebody, like, they used technology to really get the name out there for campaigning purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Pros and cons.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking to us.
Oh, here. Yeah. I know we sidetracked.
Take a card.
Yeah, most definitely.
Well, we sidetracked from the questions.
Yeah, but we got information.
Your comments were better than the questions anyway.
Yeah, and now that I know what you guys are all about here, I may have to stop back in.
We're once a month.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Yeah. Nice to see you guys. I work here. So.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
You not notice that she's seated us before?
I get confused. By simple thing.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, perfect.
Well, perfect.
Would you like to be a guest at one point?
We could use a female. We've talked about that recently.
Yeah, we have. We could use a female thing. Guest host.
Although you don't see color or gender, you could tell.
But it was...
We'll have you as a guest. We could use somebody that actually knows what they're talking about, too, because we're just shooting from the hip here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that's probably where I got to.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
All right.
All right, it was nice chatting with you guys.
You too.
I'll get in contact with you if that's
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Send us a message.
Yeah, I will do that.
Thanks, Jane.
All right. So, we were talking about voting, and I was asking you guys why you vote. Jeremy, would you like to weigh in on this topic?
Yes, I would.
All right. In between bites of Asian shrimp.
This Asian shrimp is great.
It is very good. Yes.
I remember when my dad would go vote. I would go along with him, and I thought it was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I could not wait until I was old enough to go behind that little curtain. And, well, of course, by the time I was old enough, that setup was gone, and I didn't get to go behind the little curtain anymore.
Was it a big boot? Like, was the curtain real long?
No.
It was like a little small, at the, you know, kind of covered up your head and shoulders, and like was it like
yeah,
a,
it was
like,
just
yeah.
A half, you know. Wasn't a shower curtain, Rob.
Well, I'm trying to think what it was like as a kid. You brought me back to thinking of did I ever go with my mom to vote?
No.
And what it was like.
Same little.
And you put the ballot in
the little grid thing.
Right. Yeah, you had a stylus. You had a
screwdriver.
Yeah. You had to punch through the holes and hanging Chad and all
of
that.
Yeah. But so I remember that. That's not why I vote. In fact, for a long time, I only voted in presidential elections. I say long time, meaning a decade, maybe. I don't know. Just within the last 5 years, I've started voting in all of the local, smaller elections. And I do it because I think it does matter. I know the likelihood of a race being decided by one vote is very small. I understand that. But it's the summation of it all.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when you're standing up to be counted, right? You're like, hey, I'm paying attention. I might not know what I'm talking about, but I'm out here.
So if nobody, you know, nobody in my neighborhood shows up, then maybe I'm the only guy who votes. You know, what if you're the only one who votes?
Right.
Then you control the whole thing. That's power.
So there was a movie about that, right? Wasn't there a Matthew McConaughey movie where he was the only guy, like, his vote was going to decide some election?
I don't know. I don't watch too many of his movies.
I haven't seen the movie.
Did you take
his
shirt off?
I remember that. Probably. Yeah.
You got to vote. This shirt's chafing me, man.
That was a scarily accurate impression.
Wow, I've never done a movie. That was just wrecked.
All right. Okay, so
that's why I vote. I don't know. That wasn't much of an answer. I get it.
No, that's fair. I mean,
do you think we're all deluded that we're getting like the red, white, and blue covers thrown over our face?
Like I said, somebody asked me earlier in the week why I don't vote, and I gave them my standard answer, which is at some point I realized I was voting for the lesser of two evils. Right. I was so disappointed in the choices that were being presented to me that I was voting against somebody instead of for somebody, basically. But voting for the lesser of two evils. And that means I'm voting for evil. Okay? And I'm not willing to do that anymore. So I take a moral stand and say I believe that both candidates are evil. One may be slightly more evil than the other, but I'm not going to vote for either one of them. All right, so that's my standard answer.
All right, I get that.
Well, and you've mentioned this before. Is that by your vote you're not only voting for the candidate that you prefer more than the other terrible candidate. You're also voting for the system.
Right.
You're saying I believe in this.
Right. Yeah.
And I think this is a good way to go. That's right.
Yeah. So you're giving tacit approval of the system. You're mm-hmm. agreeing to be bound by the outcome when you participate mm-hmm. in the system. Yeah. So that's kind of a separate argument. I gave my standard answer and I was challenged on that. And he came back and said, all right, well, what about ballot initiatives? That come from a grassroots organization. They go out and they get, people sign a petition and, they put something on the ballot. Why don't you vote for those? And I thought about it for a minute and I thought, well, maybe he's got a point. Maybe I should. But then, so I spent a couple more days thinking about that. And I think I still won't vote for those, and here's why. First of all, what we just said, you know, I think the entire system is corrupt.
Come on over. Just a little podcast.
Indeed.
No, you have to guess. You have to guess which one is. Oh, man, he's nailed good. It. He's got anarchist radar.
So you gave it a couple more days, and you.
Yeah, and so you know, like we just said, it's, you know, you're buying into the system. If you vote, you're adding an air of legitimacy mm-hmm. to a system that doesn't deserve it, okay? But in addition to that, I don't want to live in a society where policy and laws and different approaches are decided in that way, okay?
Right.
And I think that. Because it inevitably leads to tyranny of the majority. So I would be okay with voting if every decision that was voted upon was decided by a unanimous vote. Then I would be okay with it. If every election had to be unanimous, you know, if everybody had to agree on a certain course of action, then I would say that election is legitimate and I would be okay with it.
I think, or to put words in your mouth, which
sure,
I'd like
ahead.
To. I think you would also agree with an election where both choices did not violate some of your core principles about whatever human rights were. You know, so if either choice seemed like we're all deciding to go this one way, but whichever way it is, whether it's A or B, doesn't violate any of my core principles or core principles of any human being, you'd be like, fine, all right, we turn right, yeah. We turn left. What do we care? You know?
So I'd say, yeah, okay, I'll vote for that option. But the problem with that is I am still imposing my will, because if I happen to be in the majority and the option I choose wins, I'm still imposing my will somebody else,
and that's right.
On an entire group of people. You know, maybe as much as 49.9% of the people.
Yes.
And that's not something I want done to me, so I'm not willing to do it to other people.
So and this is the podcast. This is what I mean, we're taught, and I'm seeing my daughter go through it. You know, they get the little, you know, you get the little iFoted, little flag sticker, and you feel really good about it. And they vote for,
and like we posted on Twitter this week, you know, the reason people vote is so they can brag about it on Facebook.
that's the only reason anymore is for people to vote.
That would come up and say, "Hey, did you vote?" Or
yes, God, get out of here.
Leave me alone. That's your business.
So that story I referenced earlier, it was interesting because they talk about the Swiss cantons, okay, and how voting there, you know, voting has always been a sense of civic pride in Switzerland, and it's because of the canton system. You know, they drive down these decisions to very small districts. They're called cantons, but they're so small that everybody knows each other. You know, it's like a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And so voting carries this, there's a stigma associated with not voting, you know, because you want to be seen at the polling place, right? You want everybody
Because you're engaged.
You want to go there and you want to vote because you want everybody to, you know, see you voting.
Uh-huh.
And it's because there's, you know, there's pride associated with it. And I see that, you know, Facebook has kind of taken on that role in our country people are voting simply because they want to brag about it on Facebook, not because they feel strongly about any of the issues or because they're, you know, out of a sense of civic duty. It's simply because they want that sticker. They want to be able to say,
"I voted."
You're
making me sick for the world and
okay.
Terrible.
We've talked about this before. Does that sully the end result? And I don't remember when we were talking about it, but we talked about it with the protests in Ferguson and people being bought off by food and whatever else, and, you know what? But okay, so you still voted. Does that delegitimize your vote?
I'm not sure I'm following
you. Two people two people want to vote, or two people vote, they both did the research so they know what they're voting on.
Right.
But one, it's an arduous task that they perform, he or she performs, because they want to be able to have that canton.
Right.
You know, hey, I look at me. And the other does it because they believe in whatever is going on in the community, and I want what's best for the community.
Right.
Is that somehow better? Is their vote somehow more worthy?
That's a Greek dilemma.
Yeah, I
like,
don't know.
Does your motivation matter in what the result was? Because your vote really is just the stylus through the paper, right?
So, yeah, talking about motivation takes me back a few episodes when we were talking about Edward Snowden, right? And his motivation for what he did.
His does matter, though. He's punk.
Well, but so, does it matter? That's a great question, Jeremy. I mean, should the person who's doing it out of a sense of duty get more kudos from people than the person who does it just so that he can brag about having done it?
And hopefully we're posing good questions to the listeners, but even a more stupid version of this conversation, which gets bandied about a lot, is like, why should people that don't know about the issues get to choose?
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
so you go ask the people. They should be able to ask one current affairs question to each voter, and if they can't pass it, you can't vote. You know, which is a little bit like a literacy test
what that question is.
Right.
Do you have to ask the same question to all voters?
Right.
But
there's a certain conservative, Mr. Jeremy, there's a certain conservative thread out there that pines for the days when only landowners can vote, and you must be able to pass the test because, you know, if you're a landowner, you have stake in this country, and if you're not, you shouldn't get to vote, you know?
Yeah.
And that's and we've evolved from that, I would go ahead and say.
Well,
maybe.
So another, even before asking the question, is the voter ID laws and the... Well, we can't make them show this, or you can't make them show that, because that's...
I don't even want to think about that.
Another thing that happened when I went to vote on Tuesday, guy asked the guy in front of me for his ID, and then he said, well, I'm sorry, I can't ask for your ID, I have to ask for your identification. And I think he was mixing up what he really meant.
Right.
Okay. He meant, I can't ask for your driver's license.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because on the sheet right there, it says voter or ID. I mean, it's on the sheet. But
yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, my point was, the people running this don't even know what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so they're all volunteers, mostly, right? People running the polling place.
So then we should
It's not like they're professional. No, I'm not saying that, but, like, they show up, half an hour early for some, quote, training? You know, I'm making air quotes. That's who's running your polling place, right?
So what happened? This is a classic conversation that happens all the time in my family, and it has to do with the Catholic Church. Like, the Catholic Church, I don't know how much I've ranted about this before on the podcast for the listeners. You know, the bulletin's crappy, the services, you try to call in, and, you know, some lady that doesn't know what's going on answers the phone. She's just there trying to volunteer and help the church. You know, it's like, it's bad. The Catholic PR is terrible.
Right.
You know, the people there that are serving, that are there to face the community with logistics, are usually pretty terrible.
Right.
The greeter, we have the greeter at my parish that's got to be the world's worst greeter. He just stands there like Lurch with the bulletin.
Greet.
He doesn't greet.
He doesn't listen to the podcast.
And I will not divulge which parish it is. But he kind of stands there and he just sort of holds out the bulletin. He doesn't even really say anything to you. And every time I rant about this to the more devout Catholics in my family, you know what they say? You want to make it better? You make it better.
Yeah, right.
You be the greeter. Right. You hand out name tags and give out high fives to the kids for showing up to Mass, you know?
You want to complain about the guys working the voting booth? You work the voting booth.
Yeah.
You work the polling place.
There is that, but there is, if you're going to do something, you need to do it well.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I think that's an Einstein quote. Isn't it? You know,
probably
not exactly what I said.
It's either him or Benjamin Franklin.
Anything worth doing is it's got to be one of the two.
Right. And I have a real thing. I talk to really mend the threads. I have a thing about logistics like poor logistics drives me absolutely crazy. And to bring it back to the Catholics, the fish fry used to be run logistically so poorly with the way you had to get the tickets. And there was this huge line, and there was like, you know, two people dishing out the fish. And there was like 18 people dishing out cake at the end. Like, how about more people dishing out whatever it was?
So we might be off on a tangent now.
We might be. But it had to do, I forget why this came, but like I think like being an election observer or like doing, I think the logistics would get me so enraged, you know.
But they still have the little book.
The little
flip through.
They flip through and where's your alphabet?
Name on this and what? And then two people have to.
You
got to
sign it. Did he really sign it? Yeah. So essentially, what happened at my polling place? We had. And this probably happens everywhere. We had 8 people checking people in, right? And we had 3 voting machines. So, man, you could check in like grease lightning, you know?
Right.
You had a swarm of people. Hey, thanks for voting.
And then wait an hour to vote.
And then you would stand in line for an hour. Like, somehow, for whatever reason, that would just I don't think I could deal with that.
All right. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion of voting and why you shouldn't do it. So stay with us. Sorry. My impression is not as good as Jeremy's, clearly.
I can't do it again. I don't know.
Man, the beer is making me thirsty. So, Rob alluded to this a little bit earlier, that voters should perhaps be qualified in some way before they're allowed to vote. And
that's a voter oppression and disenfranchisement. Right.
Boom.
There.
Okay. I agree.
I can't believe Rob would advocate that.
I merely mentioned a certain thread.
Fair enough. But in recent days or weeks, the NPR show To the Best of Our Knowledge, or TT Book as we know it, had a segment.
By we, you mean you.
I know what is that.
Had a segment where they were interviewing a political science professor who had an interesting theory about voting, and he was basically proposing that people who don't know how to vote shouldn't be allowed to vote, and that there is good voting and there is bad voting, and he's basically saying, you know, the uninformed voter should not be allowed to vote because they're potentially doing more harm than good when they're voting for, you know, something they're not fully informed about. So, I mean, you can say what you want about whether or not that position is valid or has value. I'm I'm sort of ambivalent about it, obviously, because I don't think we should vote on anything. So it really doesn't matter whether somebody's qualified or not. But it is another argument for why we shouldn't vote, because, I mean, really? And I'm talking to my listeners now. Have you watched our YouTube channel? Because there are some folks out there that should not be allowed to vote.
But they're very engaged.
Well,
they're engaged enough to come talk to us about their opinions.
We're in a bar. And
passionate. I'll go with passionate.
Yeah, they're passionate. And we're in a bar, so we get a lot of people talking to us that, you know. So anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes to this segment for people who want to listen to it. It was pretty interesting.
Do you think the Great American Experiment, you know, as it was founded, didn't allow everyone to vote? If you were a village idiot, or you were a slave, or you were Hispanic, or whatever it was, the your issue is,
right,
you weren't allowed to vote. Voting was a voice of the people, but the people were only certain people. I mean, do you think that was a flawed vision of what the true democracy was, or republic?
Not necessarily.
So you think it had a little merit to it?
Well, I think that you got to have some skin in the game. And I think that initially that policy was intended to only allow those who were going to be impacted by the outcome to decide the outcome. And
because the slaves didn't, I mean, they weren't voting on whether slaves were cool,
right,
or not.
So, I mean, you could have a policy that says only property owners can vote, but then you can't exclude blacks and women from owning property.
Yeah, right. It all has to go together.
That's the flaw. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that you're preventing them from voting. Mm-hmm. It's that you're preventing them from owning property.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with that approach. But yeah, logically that makes sense, right? Because you could easily reach a point, and I would make the argument we have reached that point in this country where the people voting on things no longer have a stake. A personal stake. They are voting on how to use other people's money. It's not their own money. And once you have a majority of people making that decision, that's when your civilization falls apart.
# executive order amnesty.
So when you, I had a great vision of symmetry here when you said other people's money. I mean, do you think that's people without money trying to use the democratic process to gain more money for themselves from people with money? Or do you think it's more people with grand sums of money trying to use their influence to get more money? Like, which way do you think that arrow goes, or does it go both ways?
So I think it's the classic analogy of, you know, when the number of people riding in the wagon is greater than the number of people pulling the wagon, then, you know, society is going to break down. And so the people riding in the wagon are the ones voting on how the money that the people pulling the wagon have to be spent, how that money has to be spent. So Jeremy just handed me a story he printed out, and the headline.
Go ahead and read the headline, but headline I'll caution you, it's from InfoWars, but
yeah,
so
okay.
You're just
so
talking about.
Take that for what it's worth, yeah. But financial collapse will cause civil unrest to erupt in America by 2016.
And if you read, it's a guy who's predicted several other things, like the 1987 Black Monday crash, the 98 Russian financial collapse, blah, blah. You know, the Ivan Browning of predictions of financial. But when I was reminded of that when you said when the people pulling are outnumbered by the people riding in the wagon,
right,
you have collapse.
And, you know, the same theme is explored in Atlas Shrugged, too, that, you know, there are producers and there are looters. And if you allow the looters to vote, Rob is groaning now because I'm quoting Ayn Rand. But when you allow the looters to vote, what is the producer's recourse?
How could you... Wait, let's back... Slight tangent here, or sidebar. How could you be rubbing your brow and about Ayn Rand? One of the biggest liberals, tree hugger ladies I ever knew in college was a huge Ayn Rand fan.
You need to invite her to the podcast.
She doesn't talk to me anymore, obviously. Well, she did friend me on Facebook, which was ironic.
I hate everything about the Ayn Rand thing. And part of it is because she sets up these like false dichotomies between producers who are making great technology and creating jobs and revenue and
the engine that drives the economy.
Right, and looters who just want to steal from it. I mean some of that is maybe
and
fictionalized for effect in
and
in
I'll grant that those terms are provocative by design.
By design. And so I don't think that's
Hillary Clinton there.
What did she say?
Business doesn't create jobs.
I try not to listen to Hillary.
But it doesn't negate the fact that there's a certain number of people who do create wealth by creating businesses, innovating, driving the economy, and then there's a certain number of people that are not part of driving the economy. They're part of reaping those benefits while not contributing anything themselves.
Right, and I think that I guess I would...
And I'm not going to comment on what the relative percentages are, but I'm saying
49.
That once the number of people who are just kind of riding along, not producing anything themselves, once that number grows great enough...
Yes.
Aren't you at the risk of just utter collapse, like this headline
said? I would agree. But I think when we picture that utter collapse, or when we picture that 49% or whatever it is, are the ones riding on the wagon, I would like to expand the vision of what that is. I think I think there are people, but it's not always your favorite demons inside of yourself that you want to demon.
What you
totally
want to
agree.
Say is that there are some rich people riding in the wagon.
There probably are. And I'm not going to say that the looters, quote unquote, that the looters are all, you know, welfare queens. They're not. Some of them are. And I'm not going to point the finger at them, though. I'm not going to hold them accountable. I'm going to say it's government to blame for producing a system
that allows that.
Right. And if I were them and I were in their position, I would do the same thing. It's a completely rational thing for them
based
to do.
Based on what your options are.
Exactly. So I'm not being critical of the looters. I'm being critical of the system that allows looters.
That's you. Ayn Rand was critical of looters.
Yes.
She wasn't trying to destroy government. She was trying to destroy the looters.
Okay, but when we try to dismantle the system of allowing that,
it was a cautionary tale.
People, left-siders, get up in arms saying, you can't take away from these people.
Atlas Shrugged and virtually everything else Ayn Rand wrote was a cautionary tale because she came from, you know, absolute communism to a country where she saw promise, and then while she lived here, she saw us moving in a direction that led her to believe we were headed down that same path.
Right. So she was trying to warn.
Yeah. All right. So we kind of got off on a tangent there, but
I guess overall.
Should there be qualifications for voters? Should they have to pass a test, for instance, before they're allowed to cast a ballot?
I mean, it would be good if they could, but I can't imagine such a test that would be relevant, that would actually work.
I agree. I think it would be very hard to craft a test that wasn't biased and, used in the way that
a lot
of people accuse, the measures that are being taken now to prevent, quote, voter fraud, people are accusing them of just using that for restricting people from voting.
Right.
And it's modern-day Jim Crow laws, right?
Yeah, and we've had guests, that have come on that have been very passionate about their experiences and the way they feel. And I think if you prod it deeper, I mean, there might not be much there, but I think it's like you get the government you get. You get the internet you get,
Right.
The internet is a...
We get the government we deserve.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what sort of qualifications do you think would be legitimate? Like, would we be justified in, I don't know.
State of policy position of each candidate.
No, I don't know. I'm not trying to make your brain hurt.
I don't know what it would be. It would be hard. But I think here's the thought of the night is that we have decided that it's better to have everybody just whip in their little grain of sand into the pot than it is to try to restrict certain people to having the power.
Yeah.
To vote.
I agree with that. And if you're going to have voting, just everybody should be allowed
right,
to vote.
Right. Yeah. And we've kind of agreed that that's our best option. And it's not great. It's not great. I mean,
it's
obviously
not
you would
great
have
at all.
You would have masters of knowledge that knew that were experts in all these things talk about it. But that's not what democracy is.
Right.
And I think people have tried that in the past and it just doesn't work, you know.
Yeah.
It's like supposed to be messy, and that's why the framers framed it the way they did. It's like we're going to leave it up to you messy people. Here's your liberty if you can keep it, whatever the thing was.
But isn't this kind of a problem that they couldn't have anticipated? Because, like, everybody that at that time, you know, that was involved in the political process was a property owner.
Yeah.
They were invested. They were going to make the informed decisions. They probably couldn't have envisioned a time when, you know, our country would be so prosperous and so... You know, life would be so easy that people could afford to just not care anymore about what goes on.
Right.
And then you're left talking about the problems that occur when you let stupid people vote.
Mm-hmm. Right, because even if you were out in the colonies and way out there, if you had the capability to cast your vote, you had capability. Like it was, you know, whereas now we've got the internet, you know, or pretty soon voting will vote on Facebook, not just say we voted.
Right.
You know, so it's like you don't need. We've gone the other way where you don't really need much capability to be able to vote. You don't have to prove that you have an electric bill. You know, you just have to prove you're a citizen.
Right. Okay. So we're going to move on now to another topic that sticks in my craw.
Right.
And Rob likes to make fun of my. My annual rant about daylight savings time. But
speaking of Rob's, there's a Rob Schneider bit about daylight savings time. And
is there?
His gym teacher calling him, set your clock back. Whale. Anyway,
okay.
I'll look it up and send you a link.
So I really do believe at this point that daylight savings time is just an exercise in control. It is simply an opportunity for the government to tell people what to do and make them do it. And, I mean, has there ever been an activity so pointless that people just do without question? You know, because there isn't this large outcry. It's not like I'm part of some huge movement that's out there to eliminate daylight savings time, right? There's a few of us out there, but... For the most part, everybody just accepts it. And they're like, whatever. You ask them, why do you set your clocks? Why do you change the time twice a year? Why do we do that? People just go, they shrug their shoulders. They say, I don't know. I do it because I'm told to.
So it's
the way you do it.
So it's light later, I can enjoy my summertime, and then I get an extra hour of sleep in the fall.
No, that's ridiculous.
One day in the fall is
glorious.
Is
no valid reason for
and
it.
And talk about bias on the podcast. Your extra hour of sleep is very much a single dude kind of thing to say.
Well, hold on.
Because the kid clock marches.
I got up at 6:30 and was out doing yard work.
Well, that's because that's who you are. Right, that's because it's who you are. But as far as the extra hour of sleep, it's a total myth when you got the young children.
Stop by. Come back.
But so I guess I take exception to your bold claim. I mean, do you think it's an active effort by the government to assert control over its citizens? Or
I don't think it started
what
that
we
way.
Do.
That's,
no, I mean
that
even
was
now.
My question. Do you think it started as, hey, here's an opportunity to exert control?
No.
It started as during World War II, right?
Well, I think it started because Germany was doing it.
Oh, well, and the Germans have always been in vogue. I mean.
And during World War I, the Germans were doing it.
Okay.
And so we thought, well, if the Germans are doing it, we need to do it too. So that's not a great reason, but at least it's a reason. And at the end of World War I, we stopped doing it.
When did we start doing it again?
World War II.
Well, Germans were doing it.
And then
they were also
we never
killing
stopped.
Jews. And that's not a good
yeah,
argument.
Exactly. We never took up the baking Jews in ovens part of it. We just set our clocks back and forth.
We're okay with phase one of this plan, but phase two is a little extreme. So we're just going to stick
with phase one.
Wow.
Okay, so my question to you guys is, can you explain why we observe daylight savings time?
Beyond that, can you explain why they expanded it several years ago? Now we start earlier and end later.
Well,
yeah, yes, so, there was legislation. There was legislation to change the season of daylight savings time. So now we're on savings time longer than we're on standard time.
And I have to believe that's because there are people. There's a growing number of people that want us to convert to daylight savings time and stay there.
But why? You know, why?
What's the difference? Why?
Well,
what does it get you?
Morning
risers?
I don't know what it gets you. I don't know what any of it got you. But speaking personally, I prefer that it be dark in the morning when I get up and go to work and that it be light longer
yes, please.
After I get off
Appreciate
work
it, brother.
In the evening. And that's what daylight savings time gives you now. So
you like daylight savings time. You don't like standard time.
I don't like switching back and forth.
Okay, but what you just said, you don't like standard time. You don't like...
No.
You don't like the universe because that's... Jerry, let it be
All
said,
right,
Jerry wants to change the universe.
I do. I am very much in favor of changing the universe, but not in that way.
Excuse me, son, can you hit high noon a little... Can you hit your apex a little earlier?
And the presumption there is, first of all, time is an illusion.
Yes,
lunchtime, doubly so. I'm
Lunchtime?
Quoting Douglas Adams now.
Oh, getting a big thumbs
yeah,
up from
Frankie's
the gallery.
Giving us a big thumbs up.
Time is an illusion, especially in strong gravitational fields, but let's not go there.
So, saying that I'm challenging the time of the universe is a little bit overstating it.
Our next podcast will be brought to you from Greenwich, England.
If I'm going to pick one or the other, I'm going to pick daylight savings time. All right?
I think that's a big step
but
in a strange direction because...
It's not the daylight savings time I'm opposed to. It's the switching back and forth.
Yeah, sure.
I want to pick one and stay there and never change my clock again.
Okay.
But I don't like losing my 5:15 and it's dark and I'm driving home from work. I want it to be light then.
Yeah. So you want daylight savings time.
Whatever it's called. That one.
The thing we just switched from last weekend. You want to keep it.
I want to keep what it was.
And the legislation that Jeremy is referring to extended that. Because
yes.
We used to change the last weekend of October. And then we change again the first weekend of April, I think. And over the last several years, those two dates have been approaching one another. They've been adding 2 weeks every year. And I don't know if it goes on for another year beyond this. This might be the last one. But, you know, I'm all for continuing that trend. Let's go until those dates meet, and then we just stop observing it altogether.
Let's take another quick segue. One of the arguments for extending the period of daylight savings time was, hey, we'll do it over Halloween, so that way it'll be light out when the kids are trick-or-treating, and they'll be safer. Guess what, genius lawmakers? They wait until it's dark to go trick-or-treating.
Right. Yeah, right.
I think I've said that before, so forgive me for the rerun, but
I just
have to say it again.
And now we have trunk-or-treat because it's too dangerous.
It's too dangerous. And you know what the kids do? They still go trick-or-treating because after that means twice the candy.
Yeah, and what's up with all the 16-year-olds that are still trick-or-treating?
Hey, I threw some off my porch, and then there were some kids on skateboards who didn't even have costumes on, and I told
So for all you teenagers out there who are listening, you are done trick-or-treating, okay?
Beyond that, I have
just pathetic.
I have a neighbor who is a grown woman with a high school-age child who still goes trick-or-treating. And she's seen enough dirty looks from me the last few years she did it that she doesn't come to my house anymore when she goes trick-or-treating.
I've seen that dirty look.
Yeah, I bet you have. And a lot of people have, I'll tell you that much.
While I'm talking to the kids out there...
who call it the process?
When you circle around the block and you hit the houses a second time, we know you're doing that. You're not fooling anybody. Just throwing that out there.
So as a state of the world commentary, maybe to close the podcast and depress everyone.
Close? You have to go home?
Closing time.
So we had two specific incidents kind of in the later time, in the twilight of the trick-or-treat time, as it were. We had one van pull up into a group of people. Mom gets out, says the kids are cold.
Were they illegal immigrants?
And says, no. And says, the kids are cold, they don't want to come out, can we get some candy?
No, you can't.
Oh, my goodness.
Part of the effort is...
We had that, and we had, after that, we had a group of kids come up dressed as zombies, gave us the full zombie walk from 50 yards.
Nice.
Sold it all the way to the end. Dragon feet, little laggy head,
absolutely.
You know, little arm kind of dangling. Got a big round of applause from the parents for the ability
the
to double candy for selling it.
Bonus. Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know what that says about the world, but, I mean, you got two types of people.
Yeah, kids, take a lesson from that. That's how you up your game on Halloween.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Don't sit in the van and say you're cold and get your mom to get out and get you candy.
Right. No trick-or-treating by proxy. We are not allowing that.
No. Oh, and sometimes when I can tell you're a little jerk and I reach into your bag to lay the candy in there, I'm actually taking candy out of your bag. So, there.
Nice.
We have that ability as adults. Podcast listeners.
Wow. Okay.
Ooh, hey.
So real quick, let me mention some listener feedback from our listener Eric.
Who agreed with me?
Yes. This is starting to become a trend.
Yeah, well that was my email back to him. There's a great disturbance in the force.
Eric said, I really like Jeremy's concerns about the protests being described as common man protests. "Quote unquote."
In relation to the Mike Brown shooting.
Yeah, we're referring to the situation in Ferguson and the Michael Brown shooting. I've had a similar uneasy feeling about them. I kind of compare it to the Occupy Wall Street movement. It may have started out with an admirable goal, but by the end, I don't think you could get any two of the protesters to agree on what they were actually protesting or what their goals were.
I think that might have been true at the end. I don't think it was true at the beginning. I mean, I do think now...
So define the beginning, the first couple of days?
Sure,
or,
right.
Yeah.
The first couple nights when they were protesting on stories that are... they're coming out to be false.
They could be, but it was an authentic sentiment. I think now, I think we have the Occupy... I think it's confirmed we have the Occupy movement involved and counterculture... segments that are bombed onto this thing, and now it's become kind of the circus. It's become the hashtag of the moment.
Yeah, the longer it goes on, the more people are going to glom onto it for their own.
Yes,
I agree, but I still debate the legitimacy from the beginning.
Well, I mean, you could disagree, but I think it was authentic,
and I think a lot of things.
And that's why we have a podcast.
And that's... So let's... those lines... I printed out the proposed rules of engagement, the 19 rules that the protesters have asked.
This is kind of interesting.
This is... I don't even know. I've circled about half of them. But let's see... Number 12 is maybe, well, no, let me go back to number five. Every attempt should be made to communicate with protesters to reach, quote-unquote, common sense agreements based on these protocols. Common sense is not reigning here. So let's not put it in the rules, because that's not how the engagement has been from the start.
Right.
Number six, clear standards of professionalism and sound community-friendly policing will be maintained and adhered to at all times. Community-friendly. What was community-friendly about burning down a Quick Trip?
Yes.
Is that community-friendly?
No.
Is that?
Absolutely
no.
not.
No.
So, I mean, this is kind of like the list. I mean, it's funny that, you know, they put together this list because they are paralleling the Occupy Wall Street movement to a large degree, because they had a list of demands as well, right?
Right.
And the list kept growing, you know, from month to month or whatever, as new groups joined and added their own demands.
And free Crocs, too. And
right.
So I don't know how long you want me to go with this, but number 12, media and legal observers shall not be considered participants in protests, shall be allowed to do their jobs freely. One of the first nights of the protest, there was a report on Channel 5 of protesters climbing on the vehicle of the media and not allowing them to drive off. And I forget her name, little smallish brunette lady on Channel 5, Elizabeth something or other. Anyway, one of the protesters was saying to her, as they were essentially stuck there, couldn't drive away, "Now you know how it feels." That's what she reported. "Now you know how it feels to not have control." So here's our rules that we want you to follow, and we're going to do whatever we want.
Right, we're not going to adhere to these rules.
And that's my problem with this whole thing. The part about where Michael Brown assaults the store owner, the part where his mom assaults essentially a family,
well,
a pseudo-relative.
Right.
Forget all that stuff. Let's focus on where this guy was shot. Well, yeah, but this was... that doesn't matter. He was shot. All of the details matter.
Right.
And there's too much of not including all the details and all the facts. And...
yeah, I agree. So,
cannot get on board.
And it makes you wonder, why would they go to the trouble of putting this list together? Right? And how did they come up with 19? You know, that
right.
Wouldn't you love to be in that meeting? Like, everybody, you know, they brainstormed for 4 hours and they came up with 19 things on the board, so they just wrote them all down.
Either do Letterman style and stop at 10, or go for the full 20. I mean, let's.
Why are you so tied to the base 10 universe?
Hey, sometimes I'm a hexadecimal guy. I like a good base 16. Well, one other thing, number 19, it includes. Medical care will be liberally made available. What? How does that even enter into this?
Wait a minute. Don't they have Obamacare now?
I thought everybody did.
Everybody's got medical care.
They have.
Anybody but me. I don't have it.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Yeah, I'm not sure how, maybe if medical care is an issue, you need to rethink what's going on here.
Agree.
All right.
We're not done yet. I have a couple last things.
Okay.
No.
You got something in the reading room you want to talk about?
Not necessarily the reading room, although, let's see, give me a quick scan. Oh, well, the IRS seizing accounts on suspicion, no crime required. That one was kind of eye-opening, because as a person who tries to save money and makes small deposits little by little... that's pretty much the MO of this lady who's all of her assets were seized. One right before that, ex-CBS reporter's book reveals how liberal media protects Obama. Rob, you have anything to say about that? No? All right, let's move on.
I hadn't heard that in the reading room.
Okay. This is a radio reference to a commercial that's on the radio, and I won't mention the men's hair salon that clips hair while watching sports.
There's a number of them, so.
It's an effort they're doing. It's essentially to help veterans. But this commercial is it just makes my skin crawl when I hear it. It ends with, "I don't consider myself a hero, but hey, I appreciate that you do." Well, hold on there, Chief. Just because you were in the military doesn't make you a hero, and we need to stop that.
Absolutely.
The word hero is thrown about way too much.
Right.
Fair enough.
So yeah, and knock off the commercials saying that.
Yeah.
It's arrogant. It is just plain arrogant.
Agreed. And you maybe you got a tough job.
Maybe you do.
Right.
A lot of people have tough jobs.
Exactly.
So wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
By the way, I'm not going to get my haircut there either. So.
Well, there went another corporate sponsor.
You do it at home with a Flowbee anyway.
So?
So.
Tell the difference? No.
All right, so I'd like to thank our listeners and thank the folks who stopped and talked to us tonight. We had some interesting discussions both on the air and during the break. I want to thank GC Food and Brewery for hosting us again. Thanks for the free beer. Oh, wait, we didn't get any free beer. Well, maybe next time.
I anticipate great things in 2015 with free beer.
That's our New Year's resolution, to get free beer out of this place.
And work on that legislation that we've done nothing about.
Oh, yeah. All right. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.